you and up to me and up to all of us.
So let's start at the very beginning. How and when did this band originally come together?
It was back in 1982. Actually, interesting fact, my first band before The Box was another outfit from Montreal, well known for being called Men Without Hats. And I stayed with the Hats for about a year. And then when I decided to leave the band to do The Box, I kept the same record company, the same management. And by the time we were ready to hit the stores with our first record, The Safety Dance was being a big, huge hit all around the world. And that gave instant credibility to our managers. And then we profited from that enormously because it opened a lot of doors and it made things a lot easier for us.
Moving on to The Box, I have to ask you, where did that name come from?
Very unsexy answer. Our first guitar, I didn't come up with it. Our first guitar player did, and he bought a pedal for his guitar kit, which was called The Box. Mm-hmm. And I guess he was just looking at his feet on these pedals, and then he turned to me and he said, "What do you think we called the band The Box?" And I didn't even realize he was talking about his pedal there. And I thought it was interesting because my roots, my musical diet from when I was a kid was progressive rock bands like Genesis and all that. And the musical box type of thing seemed, came back regularly. And I thought it had an aura of mystery around it. You didn't know what was inside the box. Could be a gift, could be, you know, whatever. And so I thought that little mystery type of thing there was appealing to me. And I just said, yeah, why not? And then I liked the graphics of it. You know, that B-O-X is really easy to interpret graphically. So, yeah, we took it like that and we never gave it a second thought.
Now, I have to ask, and I know that you've recorded a French album, but talk to me a little bit about what it was like in the 80s to deal with the record labels in the sense that, you know, did they push for English recordings or were they actually supportive of recording in French or how did that whole thing play out?
Well, the whole thing took root in the very fact that I was just out of Men Without Hats and Men Without Hats were having this huge hit around the planet in English and I had the same management. And so it wasn't even a question. I mean, we weren't going to sing in French, period. Although they were very open to the idea that we incorporated French in some of our songs, which we did from album number one. There's a song there called Checkmate, Quand le Roi. Quand le Roi means when the king, three dots. And the chorus is about when the king goes to war and spend people's money. The queen is having fun back home and the king will always remain the eternal cuckold. You know, and all that was in French. Yeah. And they didn't mind that at all. And the same thing with L'Affaire du Moutier, which a song, the English title is Say to Me. It's a murder story that takes place in France. So I tell the story in English, but when it comes to these parts where the various characters in the song interact, it's all in French. And it's not even in French from Quebec. It's from in French from France, the real, you know, accent and everything.
Now, talk to me a little bit about what many consider, of course, your breakout album, 1987's Closer Together. The album spawned three hit singles. Take us back to there. What was it like to go through that to kind of see the band break out?
It was completely crazy.
Yeah.
For one thing, well, we did have to wait for three albums for that to happen. And when Closer Together broke out, it was a major hit, at least here in Canada. You could hear the song all the time on the radio, on TV. The video played all the time. It was crazy. And then we had Ordinary People. And then lastly, Crying Out Loud for Love, which had a video also. All three had videos. And then the SOCAN, the company that collects authors' rights, calls us to go to Toronto for some kind of a night, you know, awards type of night there. And two of those three songs had been have been songs that had generated most revenue in authors' rights. And the one in between, we had the first and third place, and the one in between was Bryan Adams. So you can only imagine. It was unbelievable. For us, it was just a dream.
Well, and I understand that I read somewhere that the single closer together. It was a commission for leukemia or something like that.
That's right, Lucan. Lucan is the Canadian Foundation Against Leukemia for Kids.
Okay.
And they called me up one day and they said, we'd like to have a theme song because we're doing a huge fundraiser with the Montreal Canadiens, who had just won the Stanley Cup in 86.
Mm-hmm.
And they were putting together a video on the theme of team spirit. And I don't remember if they are the ones who suggested I called it Closer Together or if I came up with that idea. But anyways, So, we wrote the song in about, 24 hours, something like that. And we gave it to them, and that was that. Then we did the video. We recorded it at the Montreal Forum with the Montreal Canadiens. All of that was a lot of fun. And the sick kids also from St. Justine's Hospital. We made a phony hockey game and all that. And then the record company heard the song. And they said, well, that's all very well with the Lucan thing, but this is going to be the first single off third album. That's guaranteed.
So the band broke up in 1992, not to be a downer, but you reformed it with a different lineup in 2004 and even released more music. Now, how was that second go-around with the Box different from the first?
Well, to begin with, I have to say that we didn't really break up as much as we died from exhaustion. really, we were signed with Capital EMI in Los Angeles at that time, and we were on the road all the time. Yeah. And it had been like that for 12 years. Well, yeah, 10 years. And so the band was completely exhausted, and the record company there committed a big mistake, which kind of killed the fourth album, and that was like the straw that broke the camel's back for some of the members of the band. So I lost three people coming back from Los Angeles, and then the other two about a year or two later. So it's really, we tried to survive until 93, 94, and then I lost two remaining members, but I have to say that we remained very good friends. And then I started doing something else. I did music for films, jingles for publicity, documentaries, that sort of thing. I was raising two young kids at home. As luck would have it, I saw my kids grow up because I wasn't on the road all the time. So mm-hmm. I had my studio in the house and I did what I had to do and blah, blah, blah. And that lasted for about 10 years. But there was relentless pressure from the industry for us to reform and to go back on stage and play. And so I proposed that to the former members, and they would have nothing to do with it. They really okay. didn't want to go back into that business. But then I had formed other alliances with other people in these music film days and all that. And I had a band, which we had formed just for fun, a French band, by the way. Mm-hmm. And we were playing every Tuesday night in a club in Montreal having fun. So I thought to myself, this lineup could be a good one to reform the Box. And I proposed to them, and they said, absolutely, let's do that. And since I didn't want to come back with only reheated sauce, okay, mm-hmm. we decided to put out a new record. And so that's the one that came out 2005, then another one 2009, and then 2018, and even a record that I, the songs I had written with the former members, we took that and released it, I believe, in 17. And it's a completely different experience because instead of going out there and playing because we needed to, because we had to, we did it for fun. Great. And we still do. So it's been 18 years now with this new band, since 2005. 2004, to be exact. And we're still having a ball, and we're honing this show like you wouldn't believe. So the fact is that because we're doing it for fun instead of out of obligation, it's day and night.
I watched an excerpt of one of your interviews from a while back, and you said exactly that. You said that touring and going on stage and stuff now, when you don't have to sell records, there's no pressure to sell records, is just about going out and doing it for the love of performing and playing music, that sort of thing.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm amazed to see how much that remains true even now after 18 years.
Now, I came across another quote of yours that said something to the effect of, by the 2010s, the music industry had changed so much that you felt no need to create entire albums. Can you elaborate?
Yes. Well, first of all, if you're going to do an entire album, you need to have a lot of money. And record companies aren't going to sign an old band like us. Okay, they're going to sign young artists, preferably female, that dance well and that sort of thing, you know, but a bunch of old farts like us, nah, not so much. And so it does, it's, and then, yes, if you do an LP and you put it out on the market, you need the entire marketing machine behind it and all that. And nobody knows how it works today. I mean, take five presidents of the five biggest record companies in the world, ask them the same question: how do we deal with the music business now that internet has stolen it from us? And they'll come with five different answers, one of them probably the exact opposite of the other. Okay, so nobody knows what to do today. It's no use to come out there and do this huge investment into a complete record. So what you need to do is just either you release song by song, or you do an EP, like we did in 2018. We did a five-song EP, and you manage it yourself as best you can through social media and that sort of thing. But there's an ocean of people out there, very talented people, who put a bunch of stuff now on the web, and you have to compete with that. So, yeah, the music industry, as we used to know it back in the 80s, that's gone.
Now, I understand, off topic, that you like to dabble in a little bit of painting, and you also have your own recording studio for when the mood strikes you to make a little music.
Well, it's not really a recording studio. It is in the sense that I can do anything I want, musically speaking, in it, but no drums. Because for a drum kit, you need the big thing. But the thing is, today, with all the software that exists to record music, all you need is a laptop. For example, if I need to do drums, then I go to my drummer's place and I do the drums there. And the same thing with the bass player. I'll go to his place and we'll do the bass there. So, but all of the writing I do on my own here in my studio. And yes, painting, yeah. The thing is, 15 years ago, we moved, my wife and I, from Montreal to Mont-Tremblant. Mont-Tremblant is a ski station north of Montreal, about an hour and a half in the country. And because our daughters are now adults and all that, and we had it with the city life and all that. So we moved out the country. And I think the mood here was conducive for me to, you know, to delve into that. So I started painting. And like anything else, if you do it every day, you can get pretty good pretty quickly. And so I joined a collective of artists around here, all expatriates from Montreal, who live here now, and we started a gallery and that sort of thing. Because I had time on my hands, that's it, that's all. And it's a very pleasurable thing to do. I found out while painting that it's exactly the same process as writing a song. The context is different, the instrument, I mean, of course, the medium is different, but it's the exact same frame of mind, the exact same process that goes inside your mind, and that you don't really need to be technically able because there's a variety of tools at your disposition that you can download from the net almost for free, which can allow you to experiment in that sort of line, and you'd be surprised the results you can get. And by the way, I learned how to paint through YouTube. Yeah, I just watched a bunch of videos of painters who do their stuff, and they show you tricks and whatever. And that's the way I learned. At a certain point, I even did some very high precision, hyper realistic painting, which I all learned how to do on YouTube.
When you look back on your time with the Box, and I know you're not done with the band, but what are you most proud of?
Having survived non-success. That's the way I'd put it.
Sure.
The way I envisioned the Box was we were going to be another U2, another The Police, another whatever, you know, and then tour the world and that sort of thing. And that never happened. It happened, but to a very small extent. And it's the way I survived that and made the best of that that I'm most proud of. I'm absolutely convinced, hear me out. I'm absolutely convinced that if the band had gone big the way I wanted it, and that we spent another 250 days per year on the road and everything, I'd be divorced today. But the fact is, I've been with my wife for 36 years. I would have never seen my kids grow. And I have. Not only that, but I was a pretty good babysitter. And I changed diapers like you wouldn't believe. But I was able to do all that because the band didn't take me to the level of craze which I always wanted for it. And so I think that now that I can reflect upon it, I'm 65 years old now. Mm-hmm. Now that I can look back at all that, I think that the proudest I am about my entire career is the fact that I never lost sight from what's important. And I have to say that my wife was a great help in that.
You're a little bit modest, though, because I think a band like The Box, I mean, you guys had a lot of successful songs that a lot of people don't necessarily equate The Box with the songs. Like there's music there that are 80s staples that people are like, oh my God, I love this song. But nobody knew who the band was until they looked it up. And then one day you come to the realization that all these amazing songs are by the same band. So I think that you're selling yourself a little bit short there.
Let me tell you something that's pretty funny. Almost everywhere we play today, mm-hmm. I got someone who comes to see me after the show. We always do a meet and greet after the show, and we take pictures with people, that sort of thing. There's always someone who comes to me and says, I didn't know you guys did covers. And I say, we don't do covers.
Exactly.
And they say, what do you mean? All these songs that I know very well that you played, those are all your songs? And I say, yeah.
Exactly.
So it kind of proves your point.
Yeah, no, it does. And I think that's the ultimate compliment. Without complimenting you, it's an ultimate compliment, isn't it?
Absolutely. But I find it, but there's an explanation to that also. If you remember the way I looked back in the 80s, I never played the game. I never had the big hair. I never had the spandex. I never had anything like that. I looked pretty boring. And so when it came to radio, no problem. People played us like crazy. We had 9 hit songs, one after the other, okay, yeah. From 1982 to 1991. And that was all very good. But I never, ever did the cover of a magazine because I was just uninteresting to look at. So people know The Box because of the numerous songs that we had on the radio that played endlessly. But they never associated the song to an image, to a picture, to a face, because the media didn't see any interest in showing that face anywhere.
So what is the state of the band these days? I mean, are you still writing, recording music at all?
Not really, because we just finished a summer tour, a tour that lasted last April and just finished this early November. And we're a little bit tired, so we're taking a break. And by the way, we're not finished. We still have a show to do on December 9th. But then after that, we're just going to take the entire winter off, and then we'll see what happens. Insofar as writing, as I said before, we don't make plans anymore because it's not a practical thing to do. If we have something to say, and if we decide to hit the studio and then start jamming around and throwing ideas around, we're going to do it just because we feel like doing it, not because we have to or because we think it would be a good thing commercially, because it's just a waste of money. Radio stations won't play you, and and unless you do a video, which costs a lot of money. So the thing that I would like to do very much, though, is to videotape the entire show. And that is a project that I intend to do this next year in 2023, because this show is so perfectly owned. And this band is so much fun on stage. I'm talking about my bandmates there. They're really a bunch of clowns. And we really have a ball on stage. And it shows. People really appreciate it. And I want to put that on film. So that is my next project.
So we might get like a concert Blu-ray or a concert DVD down the road?
Something like that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Plus, we need to, I'm not sure when the last time you were out here, but we need to get you out to Western Canada as well.
I know. We get somebody on that. And every time it's a little bit of a problem because, see, these band members, they all have a career outside of The Box. Right. And it's difficult for us to go for more than 4 days at a time out on the road. And this last summer it's been a little bit taxing because we did a bunch of 3 dates. Yeah. And so if we go to Toronto, for example, well, then the the day after the last date, we have to spend it on the road. So a lot of us have fallen back to 4 days, week time working at work. And most of us run our own businesses, so it's a little bit difficult. I'm the only one who has time on my hands. I'm the only one who has the box and nothing else, but all the others, they have something. But if we had, let's say, Edmonton, Calgary, and Winnipeg, and then back home, I'd do it in a – but it's difficult to organize that sort of thing and make everything match and line up.
Well, Jean-Marc, this has really been a privilege for me. I've been a huge fan of the box since the 80s, and as I said, discovering all that music single after single. So thank you for taking the time to do this. I really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.